Morning. Today's Daf Mabba Basra is Kuf Yud. We are in the very top of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. The Gemara is in Mabba Basra in the 8th Perek. Deals with Nachla, deals with Yerusha, inheritance. We already familiarized ourselves with the Mishnah a couple days ago. Mishnah told us that certain people have an exchange with one another in terms of Yerusha, whoever predeceases whom. Some people only have a one-directional Yerusha, only be able to receive but not be able to bequeath. And there are some relationships that have no Yerusha. So those are the four categories of the Mishnah. And what we dealt with was line of succession. And what we've dealt with primarily over the last couple days, since the beginning of the Perek, is where's dad? Dad is not mentioned in the Torah in terms of a line of succession. When a person dies, so the Torah describes how, number one, his son, number two, his daughter, number three, his siblings, number four, his uncles. But that's it. The Torah doesn't mention any other relatives. The Torah then goes on to say, after that, then you look for the closest relative after that. But the Torah does not mention the father. So the Gemara never discusses the question of why the Torah doesn't mention the father. But the Gemara just simply acknowledges that he's there. It's just encrypted in the Torah. You have to look for the drasha of where to find dad. And yesterday's daf, what we found was two drashas. Well, yesterday and 2 days ago. We found his two drashas that included dad in the line of succession. Where does he belong in the line of succession? So he belongs after the daughter, meaning that first the son, then the daughter, and then if there's no son, there's no daughter. So then we turn to the deceased father. He is now in the next in the line of succession, then followed by the siblings of the deceased, then followed by the uncles, and then v'chule v'chule, and then you just continue looking for relatives after that. The Gemara talked about this idea of mishpacha, that when you have mishpacha, that generally speaking, it follows the line of the father. The male line is really the determinant in terms of mishpacha. We're not talking about who is a Jew. We're talking about just simply this qualification, this idea of mishpacha. When the Torah describes mishpacha, who is it referencing? A woman, the line of the woman, the line of the man? The Gemara said yesterday it's referencing the line of the man. What set us off course yesterday, and what will continue to be off course today, is that we do find somewhere in Navi where mishpacha seems to be that we're following the mother's line, not the father's line. Where do we find that by? So we find that by Pesel Micha, the end of Sefer Shoftim, as we discussed yesterday. So there are two really tragic stories that come up at the end of Sefer Shoftim, chapter 17, 18, chapters 19, 20, 21. Chapter 17, 18 in Sefer Shoftim is about Pesel Micha, an idolatry in Avodah Zarah that was set up by Micha, and we're going to talk about the young man who serviced the Avodah Zarah and basically served in the temple, in the idolatrous temple. And then chapters 19, 2021 and Sefer Shoftim, so that's Pelegish Begiva, right? Another tragic story, not for now. But we were taken a little bit off course yesterday because in the course of discussing who this young man was who was serving in the temple of Micha and servicing the idol of Micha, so we said it was somebody who presumably was a Levi, but he was Mimishpachas Yehuda. He was from the family of Yehuda. Well, if he's Levi, so then obviously he's from Sheva Levi, which means that in terms of his patrilineal descent, so he's coming from Levi. And so, but we were confused yesterday because the Torah, the Navi describes him as being from Mishpachas Yehuda, and that seems to be his mother's line, not his father's line. Anyway, you know, the Gemara pointed out yesterday that really that wasn't the case. The case is Mishpachas Yehuda really means that he comes from the tribe of Yehuda. And as far as him being a Levi is concerned, that was actually his name. His name was Levi. And then the Gemara noted yesterday, but that's not really his name, because we also know you read the Navi, you'll see that his name was Yehonasan. His name was not was not Levi. So what the Gemara pointed out is that there could be that one of them is his proper name, the other one is just simply an adjective. And then we talked about yesterday that he could be a blend between two lines. In other words, he could be that he comes from Yosef, and it also could be that he comes from Yisrael as well. Okay, and this is part of our discussion yesterday. We are on the very top of Kuf Yud Amud Aleph, and we're still now in this tangent, and we're going to be discussing now, in general, Shiduchim. The Gemara yesterday, the line that the Gemara is taking off from yesterday, is towards the bottom of Kuf Tesam and Beis. I'm just reviewing. Amar Rabbi Lazo, Olam Yidbak Adam Betovim. Person should make sure that he associates with somebody who's good. Meaning association with somebody who's good comes out that there are going to be good results. And when we say association over here, we're really talking about marriage. Meaning that when you find your friend for life, so you want to make sure that he's coming, that she or he, I mean, depending on who you are, but is a good person coming coming from a good family, and you got to make sure. In fact, the Gemara said, and again, the Gemara is saying this. So, like, I know it's, you know, scandalous, but the Gemara is saying it. The Gemara says, you know who Moshe married? So he married Bas Yisro. So as a result of that, Yonasan comes out for Moshe, meaning Moshe's very own grandson ended up serving idols. So the Gemara says, again, the Gemara is saying this. I'm not trying to be dramatic, but the Gemara says, you know, Magia Lo, meaning it, you know, Moshe deserved it. That's who he married, so his, you know, his grandson's going to be an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. Mashein Kane, as it relates to Aaron, so Aaron chose the daughter of Aminadav. So for him now, who came out from his lineage? Pinchas came out from his lineage. So the Gemara is saying, so you just got to be careful who you associate with and who you end up marrying. So in that line, now in that thinking. I'm sorry. Achos Aminadav. Correct. Thank you. In fact, that's where we're headed to. That's probably what got me confused. The Gemara now is going to basically take off from that idea, and we are in the Kuf Yud, and we are just four lines from the top of the Amud Amarava. I know the Isha Tzarich Shivduk Bachal. So you're marrying a girl, and so what kind of background check should you do on the girl you're about to marry? So the Gemara is actually very clear. Gemara gives very clear instructions. We tend not to follow the Gemara's instructions. We do other things, but the Gemara is very clear. You check out her brother. Check out her brother, and by looking at her brother, you're going to get a good sense of who she is and basically what to expect in terms of your children. What if your wife doesn't have a brother? That's the case in my case. So then I don't know. I don't know what to do then. Okay, whatever. It worked out well. Shenemar, Vayikach Aaron es Elisheva bas Aminadav Achos Nachshon. So who did Aaron marry? Aaron married Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadav, the sister of Nachshon, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Mimashu Shenemar bas Aminadav Ena Yodesh Achos Nachshon Hi. Gemara asked the obvious question. Well, when you're telling me who Aaron married, so all you need to do is just simply identify her as being the daughter of Aminadav, and we know Nachshon's in tow. We know Nachshon now is a sibling. So why is the Torah telling us, oh, and oh, by the way, Nachshon's a brother? This is where the Torah is teaching us that if you want to do a good background check on a girl that you entertain on marrying, so you got to check the brother. The brother's going to be a very good harbinger of what is going to come in the future. Tana, Robanim Domim La'ache Ha'im. And the Gemara quotes the Brisa. The Brisa has the very same Masara. That most of the children that you're going to produce are going to be similar to Ache Ha'im, to the brother of the mother. So so in other words, basically, look at her brother and you'll get a good sense of what's coming in the future. All right. We are now going to head back to Sefer Shoftim. We're going to head back now to Pesel Micha, and once again, we're going to turn our attention to the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, who was serving there in this temple. Just in terms of a little bit of the historical timeline, you know, I enjoy this stuff. So so we're looking now at. Right now, I can't tell you exactly where, meaning here's what we know. We know that when 40 years in the desert, after 40 years in the desert, so 14 years of Kibush and Chalukah, of both the conquering and the dividing of the land of Eretz Yisrael, that's 14 years. And then there was a Mishkan that was set up in Shiloh, and that lasted for 369 years. So we are now basically, again, let's just deal with larger numbers and more, you know, and more big picture. So we're basically four centuries. In other words, there was a four-century period of time where between entering into Eretz Yisrael and building the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech is going to build the Beis HaMikdash circa 400 years. I'm sorry. I gave credit to the wrong king. Shlomo HaMelech is going to be building the Beis HaMikdash 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is 440 years after entering into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so it's a significant amount of time between. And by the way, there was those extra years. In other words, I know all the years I provided was less than four centuries, but there were extra years between Shiloh and Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Anyway, 480 since Yetzias Mitzrayim, 440 since entering into Eretz Yisrael is when we built the first Beis HaMikdash. And what we're going to see a little bit later on from now is that, and you know who lived during the beginning of Bais Rishon? Moshe's grandson. Meaning this young man, who at that time was not a young man, who we're describing, lived during the beginning of Bais Rishon.
So, like a 400-year age difference between him and Moshe, the big grandson. That's very strange.
Well, no. In other words, we're going to assume that he was born more proximate to Moshe Rabbeinu. What is strange, which the Gemara is not going to make a comment about this, but I'll show you later on. I do have a source, is that he lived for a very long time. When I say very long time, I mean in a natural amount of years. So the Gemara is not going to make a comment about this, but I found a source right on the page, right in the daf. I'll show it to you later on. Okay, so right now we are, and later this morning we're going to get to the beginning of Bais Rishon, and we'll come back to that. But right now we are somewhere in Sefer Shoftim. Now Sefer Shoftim is, although this is the end of Sefer Shoftim, that doesn't necessarily mean the story took place at the end of the historical period of Shoftim. Meaning the Navi itself could be simply providing stories not based on chronology, but just based on thematics in terms of where it belongs in Sefer Shoftim. So. All we know for sure is that it took place sometime during the period of the Shoftim. And here we are now in the Navi, where basically everyone knows he's a grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. And where is he? Serving in a temple for idolatry. So this is now the Navi, basically there's a group of men from Sheva Dan who come to the temple, see him there, and they're basically looking at him saying, wait one second, we know who you are. What are you doing here? And that's the pasuk. The pasuk says, Vayisiru, exactly what the correct nusach of the pasuk is. Okay, sorry. I'm trying to... Right, Vayisiru, I got it. Vayisiru sham, Vayomru lo, okay. Mi aviyacha halom, like who brought you here? Matao sebezeh, like what are you doing over here? Umalacha po, and what are you doing over here? So, in three different ways, they're basically saying to him, like, what is going on? What are you... You're the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. Like, what are you doing here? Amar lo, la mi Moshe ka'asis, dechsiv bay. Now, what the Gemara is going to do now in its classic way is darshan. And the Gemara is going to say that these three ways that they presented the question to him is all basically another way of saying, hey, you're Moshe's grandson. Like, what are you doing over here? So, the Gemara darshins. Lami Moshe Kasis Dechsiv Bei Altikrav Halom. Aren't you coming from Moshe Rabbeinu where it says Halom? That's question number one they asked him. Lami Moshe Kasis Dechsiv Bei Ma Zeh Biadecha. The Zeh is question number two they asked him. And Lami Moshe Kasis Dechsiv Bei Vata Po Amod Imadi. There's the Po that is mentioned in the third way of asking the same question. So the Gemara basically says, this is what they were asking him. Like, how can it be that you are a grandson of Moshe and you're serving idolatry? Ta'as ekon la'avodah zarah, and now you're a priest for avodah zarah? Like, that's crazy. It's impossible. So amalem kach mekublan mi beis abi abba. So he says to them, yeah, but you know what? I sat in shir with my grandfather, and my grandfather, while I was sitting in shir, so he said the following, and this is what I learned from my grandfather. La'olam yaskir adam asmo la'avodah zarah, va'yitzarach lebrios. That a person should hire himself out for avodah zarah and not take out handouts. Earning a living is important. The way that he heard it from his grandfather, it's more than just important. It's so critical. It's so important that a person should make a living that, even if it means, yeah, I know where I work. I know it's not the nicest of places. I know this is not a good occupation for a good Jewish boy. I know that. But it's better than not working. It's better than not earning money. And so this is what he hears from his grandfather. Now, there was a miscommunication between the grandfather and the grandson. Moshe Rabbeinu did say that, but that's not what he meant. And by the way, just as good Moser, I mean, this is Moser for me, is that when you're presenting, you got to present clearly, meaning that you cannot be ambiguous. You can't be. You have to be clear. Okay, so the Gemara says that this was clearly a miscommunication between the grandfather and the grandson. Who sever avodah zarah mamish? When the grandson heard his grandfather say this, so he thought, oh, you know what my grandfather meant? Meaning avodah zarah, mamish avodah zarah. Velohi. But the Gemara says, Ela avodah zarah, avodah shezara lo. And now Moshe Rabbeinu, what he meant was a service that is foreign to him. Meaning something which is, generally speaking, what you would call beneath you. Right? I can't do that job. That job is, it's too menial. And I'm above that. The Gemara says, that's what Moshe Rabbeinu meant. He meant it literally, but when I say literally, I mean super literally. Avoda zara, a work that is foreign to you. Kida amale Rav Kahana. You know, Rav gave advice to his student Rav Kahana, and he said to him, "Nashtoshna vilta b'shuka." You know, go to the market, go flay an animal. It's an avela, which you're not allowed to do a business when selling an avela, but if you have a buying opportunity, selling opportunity, that you're allowed to do. Right, so, but, in other words, flaying an animal in the market, so that's what you should do, v'shkol agra, and get wages for it. Meaning, get a salary. Meaning, I understand it's not the nicest of jobs, v'lo tema gaviraba ana, v'zula bilmosa. And don't say, look, I'm so important, I'm such an important human being, this is beneath me. It is demeaning for me to go and to deal with animals and flay animals in the market? No. So Rav says to Rav Kahana, no, don't say no, say yes. Meaning, it's work, it's a living, it's a parnasa. So nothing should be beneath you when it comes to making a living. So the couple things over here, I'm going to go to the Rashbam right now. The Rashbam writes that there is a girsa, another girsa that they had in the Gemara, meaning that we have just learned together that a person should not feel any work is demeaning, and Rav advised his student, Rav Kahana, don't say gavaraba ana. Don't say I'm such a great individual. If you look at the Rashbam right here, Rashbam is five lines after the lines start getting wider, mid-range lines, and velotema gavaraba ana, v'ista garsina nami, velotema kahana ana. Don't say I'm a Kohen. Kohen ani v'chashav v'gnai li hadavar. I'm a Kohen. It's beneath me. You know, Kohanim, they don't do this kind of work. Which, by the way, parenthetically, they do that kind of work, but in the Beis Hamikdash, right? But in other words, but not in the market. Anyway, it leads to a classic discussion and a debate. And so funny, as I read the Rashbam, I said, "Oh, I know what's going to happen." And good to my own prediction. So Tosfos over here quotes Rabbeinu Tam. It's the third Tosfos down, and he says that Rav Kahana was not a Kohen. It happens to have been that his name was Rav Kahana, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he was a Kohen. Rabbeinu Tam has a number of Gemaras that makes his case that Rav Kahana was not a Kohen, maybe married to a Kohen, but he himself was not a Kohen. Okay, anyway, and so what Tosha says is that when you read the Gemara was not what Rav was saying to Rav Kahana is don't say that you're a Kohen, but don't say you're Kahana, meaning I'm Rav Kahana. And therefore, it's beneath me. That's how he reads the other gears of this Gemara. Okay. Anyway, back to our Gemara. We are in Kof Yud. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, about 2/3 of the way down. Kevin Shira David She Mamon Chaviv Alav. Now we go to kind of like an epilogue regarding the grandson of Moshe. And here it is. The Gemara here is saying that David HaMelech now takes notice of him, meaning Yehonasan Ben Gershom Ben Moshe takes notice of him, and he sees that clearly he loves money, meaning that look what he's ready to do in order to make a parnasa. He clearly likes money. So what does he do? So Biyoser Minu Al Otzro. So he made him a temple treasure. David HaMelech appointed him as a temple treasure, meaning, I guess the issue wasn't a trust issue, it was just simply he really liked money. So, person who really likes money, so put him in charge of money. Shenamar, and if you look in Divrei HaYamim, which the Gemara now is going to quote, so it says that who was in charge of David HaMelech's treasury? Ushevuel ben Gershom ben Menasha, Nagid al Otzaros. Nagid means he was a leader. He was an executive. He was a leader of the treasury. Now, the Navi in Divrei HaYamim describes him as Shevuel. So now, think how many names we have for him right now. We know him as Shevuel. We know him as Yehonasan. We know him as Levi. Okay, he's got a lot of names. V'chi Shevuel Shemo, v'alo Yehonasan Shemo. The Gemara over here points out, really isn't his name Yehonasan. So I'm Rav Yochanan Sheshav Lakel B'kol Libo. Yeah, Shevuel, because he returned to Kadosh Baruch Hu, meaning he did tshuva. And so he did tshuva, so he was reinstated and he was reanointed as the temple treasurer by David HaMelech for the first base of Mikdash. Okay, so again, just I'll reiterate what I said earlier, and we'll look at the Rashbam together. So what I said earlier is now historically we are way past Yetzias Mitzrayim. Yetzias Mitzrayim, first Beis HaMikdash was built, the Torah says, first Beis HaMikdash was built 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim. You'll see that in the beginning of Sefer Melachim. So 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, so I know we're by David HaMelech. So this is a little bit before Bais Rishon. Okay, but even if you, right, we're talking at least 400 years. So that means that this young man lived an extraordinarily long life. When I say extraordinary, meaning it's unnatural. In other words, people don't normally live that long. Not, you know, by Moshe Rabbeinu already, 120 years was a very, really long life. And obviously he had certain zechuyos which allowed him, provided him for live to live even longer. And let me just further develop this this question.
Yeah, Ruth also.
Yeah? Yes, yes. That's good. Right, right. But, right. Not as long as her, but yes, I agree. And furthermore, think about what he did for a good part of his life, meaning he was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah. So it's one thing to have the zechuyos to live a long life if you're compliant. I think it's fair to say, again, to a varying degree, I'm not saying this black and white, but not so compliant. He was an Ovid of Avodah Zarah, or at least serving in the temple with Avodah Zarah. So, and he lived such a long life. So the Rashbam over here comments on this. Sheshav lekel becholibo. The Rashbam now, again, about 10 lines down from the midwide lines. So he writes, Achsha shayelo mamon harbe. He had a lot of money, and so therefore he didn't need to take on these, you know, these unusual jobs. and so life got a little bit easier for him. It got a little more comfortable for him. So now he could, you know, he doesn't have to be serving in the temple, in the idolatrous temple. So Yehonasan, son of Gershom, son of Menashe, so him and his sons were the priests for Shevet Dan until Golos Haaretz, until the exile. So V'aminim B'seder Olam Ad Yom. Now what it means? What does that mean, until the exile? Meaning that does not mean until the Jews were exiled out of Israel, because that's for not going to, that's going to be another 400 years, 410 years since the building of Bayis Rishon. That's not what it means. What does it mean? So now the Rashbam over here is quoting Seder Olam. Seder Olam is Chachmei Yisrael's rabbinic account of the history since Adam Rishon. Ad Yom Shegala Mata Dan Upiso Shamicha Imo. So, Golos over here means the exile of the Pesel Micha and Shevet Dan, meaning, basically, the division of North and South. So, Kach Mefurish Beperek Basra Debrachas Yerushalmi. So, Masvinan Lei, V'haksiv Adyom Golos Haaretz. So, in other words, so now the Rashbam is quoting the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi says that, the Pasuk says that, he lived, meaning Moshe's grandson lived until Golos Haaretz, until the exile. Amri, Kevin Shemes David, Amma Shlomo Ve'echlif, Kol Hasan Klitin Ve'echlifu Imahem, Chazal Kilkulam. So now the Yerushalmi gives a little bit more details regarding the end of the life of Yonah, son of Gershon, son of Moshe Rabbeinu. So he says that here's basically his arc. It's an interesting arc, where he started off as being a, I don't know where he really started off, but ended up being a Kormel Avodah Zarah. In other words, he served under Pesel Micha. Then, as we get now to David HaMelech, so he did tshuva, as our Gemara says. But then the Gemara, based on the Yerushalmi, goes on to say that when Shlomo HaMelech took over, so Shlomo HaMelech basically, okay, new cabinet. And so Shlomo HaMelech fired all the old people and hired an entirely new cabinet. So where did that leave Yonasan? Without a job. Where does Yonasan go without a job? Back to his old ways. So I'm sorry. Chazal Kikula Harishon. Hahud Dichsiv and Navi Echad Zaken Yoshe Bebeis El. And the Navi describes that there was this old man sitting in Beis El. Beis El is the temple up north, meaning by the Aseres Hashvatim. Al Aminan Hu Haavev Kabai Hasam Kohen Lavrazara Veherich Yamim. So the Gemara Yerushalmi now basically asks the question. He's a Kormel Avodah Zarah. He's a priest for idolatry, and he lives such a long life. That's strange. So Amri Ayideh Shaisa Eino Tzara B'Avodah Zarah Shalom. So the Gemara over here paints a very complex picture regarding this individual, in that he had Ayin Tzara. He had, even though he served the Avodah Zarah, he didn't do so with his whole heart, and he did so with a lot of cynicism, which obviously the Yerushalmi is saying is a good thing. Meaning, again, complexity. Now, obviously, to be there to begin with is not a good thing, but the way he...
I'm not offering him,
right.
I'm not mentioning it at all, but...
I understand. It's you know, the whole thing is complex. So, but as he served it with a cynicism, the kind of cynicism that when people came in, people said, "Hey, look, this is idolatry. This is great." And when they met him and they talked to him, they walked out thinking, "There's not much to this idolatry." And the Gemara is saying that as a compliment within a larger context. So, Ketzadu Barnash Maisilei Torah O Imar Gedil Avodah Zarah, and the Rashbam quoting the Yerushalmi says, here's basically what happened: someone would come in with an animal, Vahave Amale Paisei Lave, and they say, okay, now you're the priest, go do your priest work. You know, here's the animal, you know, offer it to the to this god, lowercase g. Vahu Amar Mamo Ilalach Lo Achla Velo Shosa. And what Yonason would answer was, really, you see that idol over there? Do you think that idol is going to eat this animal over here? Like, come on, get real. So, lo mativa v'lo meria. It's not going to help you. It's not going to hurt you. I'm really a man of it. So then the worshiper comes and he says, okay, so what should I do then? I'm lazil isili chara pinach de solas ve eser bayin ilave. So he says, basically, you know what you'll do? You'll bring me food. Right, bring me some flour, bring me some eggs, meaning I'll eat. And va'ana afayis la alach, you know, and I'll daven for you, but there's not much that this idol can do. This idol's not eating. They gave him to Azalei Achalon Asa Chad Bar Pachin VaAmarlei Kain Amarlei Imeinam Oila Klum Ma'at Avid Hacha. So then the conversation turns a little bit strange, where now the worshipper says, "Well, you know, I thought that you were this like really, really devout idolater, and it comes out now that I hear the cynicism, and what are you doing over here? You don't believe in any of this stuff." Amarlei began Chayai, became a Shama David, and his response was, "Look, a man's got to make a living, and don't knock a man trying to make a living." Okay. So anyway, so the Yerushalmi, in giving a very complex picture of this whole incident, so the Yerushalmi basically says that yes, he served the idolatry, but no, he wasn't really that devout in serving the idolatry, and in fact, he gave people the impression that there's not much of this idolatry, and so, you know, kind of like he was like a Mossad agent, right? Like a real insider, you know, giving people the impression that there wasn't really much to this. Okay. Adkan. That takes us to the end of the Gemara. I read the end. Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. So that takes us to the end, and let's continue in the Gemara. So after having gone through a little bit of a tangent, not a little bit, a long tangent, half of today's Amud, half of today's Daf, regarding the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, now we return to our Mishnah and a discussion of succession of Yerusha. So v'habanim esav mi nalan. The Gemara's question is, from where do I know this? So Gemara's asking, what? From where do I know what? So the Rashbam over here points out, I'm reading the Rashbam inside, it is the second wide line of the Rashbam, v'habanim esav mi nalan, da'habanim kod min labanos. How do I know that son comes before the daughter? Midalokitani habanim vahabanos esav umio banos not los isunachasim ketakanes chachamim. But Maseches Ksuvos, the Rashbam reminds us. Remember, says the Rashbam, the girls are going to get something from the estate, not as a Yerusha, but as a tekanes chachamim, a rabbinic enactment that the girls before they get married, meaning if God forbid the father dies before the girls get married, so then the girls are going to get 10% of the estate as a dowry to kickstart their marriage. But in terms of Yerusha, they get zero. They don't get anything in terms of a Yerusha. And the Gemara's question is basically, and how do I know that? Meaning, how do I know that if their sons and daughters don't get anything? So, a person dies and he doesn't have a son. The Torah goes on to describe that the Yerusha then passes over to the daughter, Vavarta, where we discussed that yesterday. So, Hayeshla ben Kodem, which clearly implies that if there's a son, the son comes first. So, Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, meaning not just comes first, but also to the exclusion of the daughter, meaning the daughter doesn't get when there's a son. So, Amalei Rav Papa La Abaye, Meika ben Leros ben, Ika bas Teres bas, Ika ben Abbas lo, Hai Leros vela Hai Leros. Gemara makes a suggestion, which is very difficult to even understand. It's a suggestion, and that is the Gemara suggests, well, maybe if there's a son, he'll inherit. Maybe if the daughter, she'll inherit. But maybe if there's a son and a daughter, so maybe then they cancel each other out. And maybe no one's going to inherit. I know, it's a difficult suggestion. So the Gemara says, and the Gemara immediately rejects it. Ve'ela, the Gemara says, we're now on the top of Kuf Yud Amud Beis. So, man, leros. So the Gemara says, take out the chule, man leros. So the Gemara says, well then, who's going to get the money? And the Gemara says, Atu bar kasha de masa leros? What do you think? Do you think that you're basically the money's then going to go to the city? I'm going to make the joke. You think there's going to be an estate tax? And you think the government's just simply going to take the money because it's inherited from one generation to the next generation? Okay. So anyway, it wasn't a funny joke. Sorry. I apologize. So the Gemara says that's ridiculous. That can't be. So meaning that suggestion that nobody's going to inherit is just simply a ridiculous suggestion. So the Gemara says hacha kamina. Gemara says, no, you misunderstood my suggestion. No, the suggestion was that, look, if there's a son, he'll inherit. If there's a daughter, she'll inherit. And if they're both, meaning if the children are made up of a boy and a girl, or boys and girls, so then let them get joint. Right. Let them get a representative share of the estate. So, Amalei Abai Vitzir Chralash Minan Hechadalei. So the Gemara says, so Abai says, then what's the Torah coming to tell me? Torah is coming to tell me now, like in other words, let's hear the Chiddush of the Torah. That if there is one son, so he's going to get everything. Right? Meaning, if it's the case that if there's a son and a daughter, they're each going to get a share of the estate. So what is the Torah then saying? Well, you know, if there's only a son, he's going to get everything. Right, that's the Chiddush Torah. So V'dilma Hakamashman Debasnami Bas Yerushahi. So the Gemara says, well, no. Maybe the Chiddush of the Torah is that, look, if there's a son, he's going to inherit, and if there's only a daughter, maybe the Chiddush of the Torah is she's going to inherit. Meaning, maybe that in of itself is a Chiddush. So the Gemara says, no. Hahu Mivachol Bas Yerushas Nachlanafka. The Gemara says, no. We already knew that. Meaning, that was already an established fact that a girl is going to inherit. So now that we know the girl is going to inherit, so clearly what is the directive of the Torah when the Torah says, and if there's no son, the daughter is going to inherit? What it means is that kedima, meaning we're talking about the succession of Yerusha, meaning that if there's a son, the daughter is not going to get anything. And if there's no son, then the daughter is going to get. That's what the, and if there's a son and the daughter, the son is going to get to the exclusion of the daughter. Okay, so that is suggestion number one of the Gemara, meaning, again, question on the table. How do I know that when there's a son and the son inherits, the daughter does not inherit? So answer number one is that has to be the Chiddush of the Torah, because what else is the Chiddush of the Torah when the Torah tells us that if there's no son, then the daughter is going to inherit? So the Gemara says, Rav Acha bar Yaakov Amar Mehacha. The Gemara is going to give a number of other suggestions, three other suggestions in total, in terms of how we know that the daughter inherits only when there's no sons. But once there's a son, the daughter doesn't get anything. So the Gemara says, well, let's go up a little bit earlier in the Parsha. Right? We did this yesterday, and we did this the day before as well. Meaning the Parsha of Yerusha is in Parshas Pinchas, right after the episode of Menos Slavchat. So the Gemara says, so just look a little bit higher in the Torah. Lami garashem avinu mitoch mishpachto ki ein lo ben. So they said, you know why we're here? Meaning we're five daughters and there's no son. And the clear mashmas Torah is time of day in lo ben, hayesh lo ben ben konam, which clearly means that had there been a son, he would have inherited. Okay, so that seems to be another excellent source in the Torah that teaches us that had there been a son, then son who inherits and the daughters do not inherit. So the Gemara says, well, maybe that once was true. But the Dilma, I'm sorry, Nitna Torah Nischacha Halacha. But that was historical. But then the Torah was given, and now Nischacha Halacha, meaning now the Halacha becomes new. Now, admittedly, to this suggestion of the Gemara over here, meaning this is not the first time we've heard the Gemara say this, meaning that there was a way that it was once practiced, but once the Torah comes, the Torah tells us, you know, a new set of orders. And that's the Halacha from that point going forward. What is strange and odd, of course, is that Benot Safra takes place after Nisina Satara. So what the Gemara now really suggesting is that when Bnei Safrad were talking, they were talking about what once upon a time was, even though the Torah was already given, and I guess you have to say perhaps they didn't know about it. Okay, or something along those lines. Although to be fair, Moshe also didn't know, right? That was the end of that discussion. Moshe said, that's a good question, I don't know. Okay, anyway. So, the Gemara says, we're going to go back to the first source. First source seems to be even a better proof that, in the event that there's a son and a daughter, the son inherits to the exclusion of the daughter. Ravina mamehacha, karav elav, karav kodem. So the Gemara says, okay, well, why don't we make the argument that we made just a short couple of days ago, which is that the Torah says that in terms of line of succession, so the closer one receives first. So, karav kodem. Umay korva de ben mibas. The Gemara says, now, in what way do we say that a son is closer than the daughter? We go back to a point that we made a couple days ago, that we see that the son substitutes for the father in a couple of halachas. One, the mitzvah of yiud, where you buy an ama ivriya, and if the father doesn't want to do yiud, the son could do yiud in the substitution in place of the father. Two, steachuza, when you consecrate a field. So the father buys it back before Yovel, it returns back to the family. If somebody else buys it before Yovel, then it goes to the Kohanim during at the point of Yovel. If the son redeems the field, the son is a substitute for the father, and it's as if the father redeemed it. So those are two halachas in which we see that the son serves as a substitute for the father, proving that the son is more karov, he's closer. So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, yeah, but that doesn't prove our point. Meaning that just because the son can do yiud, that doesn't mean to the exclusion of the daughter. In other words, when it comes to the daughter in the mitzvah of yiud, N.A., it's just not applicable. Meaning, she can't marry the Amma Ivriya. So it doesn't speak to the idea that the son is closer. It just simply means that the son has a mitzvah opportunity that for her, it's just impossible for her to do. So, and steachuza, nami mehai pircha gufahu, da kaima leila tana klom yeshiba mela bamakam shein ben. And the Gemara says, now what about steachuza? So remember, steachuza was really a derivative of the idea of yibum. And what do we know regarding yibum? That when a person dies and he leaves no child, so then there's a mitzvah of yibum. But what if he leaves a child? And as we already established yesterday, child here can mean either son or daughter, so then there's no mitzvah of yibum. So again, clearly, there is no indication that in terms of kurva, in terms of relationship, the son is any closer in relationship to the father than the daughter. So from that standpoint, we don't have a good proof that the son inherits to the exclusion of the daughter. So the Gemara says, again, go back to our first drasha. Our first drasha seems to be a more solid source.
In terms of people and having a child, the child has to opt the mother, or for example, brother who passed away by his child, and the child passes away, what happens?
If I remember correctly, I hope I'm saying this correctly, the mitzvah of Yibum is gone. In other words, once the mitzvah of Yibum is exempt at the point of death, so then that's it. There's no resurrection of the mitzvah. The Gemara says, one more try. Again, what we're looking for is a source in the Torah that teaches us that if there's a son and a daughter, so the son inherits to the exclusion of the daughter. So where do we see that from? So the Gemara gave three attempts, but in attempts 2 and 3, the Gemara basically said they're not absolutely concrete proofs. So the Gemara says, keep going back to number one. Number one seems to be a much more solid proof that the son inherits to the exclusion of the daughter. And the Gemara says, maybe there's another source, and that's the following. That you are going to pass them on, them in this case means the Evkanani, to your next generation. But the Torah says next generation here means your sons. Sons to the exclusion of daughters. The Gemara says, that's not a good proof. That's not a solid proof. So in Kriyashma, we say, so that your days should extend and the days of your b'neichem. Now, what do you think it means over there? You think it means sons? So, So the Gemara says Bracha Shani. The Gemara says, okay, but maybe what we could say is that, look, there in that context, B'neichem could mean both male and female, and it probably does. And I'll say it better. It does mean both male and female, because that's talking about Bracha, meaning the Torah is promising a long life with compliance to the Torah. So there, that is talking about both sons and daughters, but that's a Bracha. Over here, when we're talking about a halachic discussion of inheritance, so maybe B'neichem could be to the exclusion of B'noseichem. So we have now four different possible sources where we see that when there's a son and there's a daughter, so the son is inheriting to the exclusion of the daughter. Meaning that's the halacha. It's just a question of where the halacha is generated from, where do we learn it from, and the Gemara seems to favor the first approach, meaning the psukim in Yerusha itself, that says, im ein ben, and then it goes to the bas, which the Gemara said earlier means that in the event that there is no son at all, so then and only then does the daughter inherit. Prior to that point in time, once there's a son, even though there's a daughter, the son's going to inherit to the exclusion of the daughter. And then the Gemara tried a second and a third attempt in terms of a drasha. Gemara did not seem to like it. The Gemara has a fourth attempt. The Gemara seems to like it. Okay, let's do a little bit more for this morning. We are at the two dots towards the bottom. Okay, we are up to the next line of succession. We're talking now about the brothers of the deceased, and specifically paternal brothers. The Mishnah says very clearly that only the paternal brothers are going to be inheriting, not maternal brothers. Minalan, and the question over here, very simple. Where does that come from? I mean, how do we know that it's only the paternal brothers, not the maternal brothers? So Amarave Asya Achva Achva Bimei Yaakov, Alahala Mina Avalominaim, Avka Mina Avalominaim. So the Gemara says, well, I think the source would be from Bnei Yaakov. Bnei Yaakov, Bnei Yisrael, but Bnei Yisrael here, I mean it literally, sons of Israel, meaning the 12 Shvatim. So they all share the same father, they do not all share the same mother. Four different matriarchs yielded the 12 sons. And yet they were linked with one singular father. So that would be seemingly a good source that only the paternal brothers are going to be linked for Yerusha. The Gemara says, okay, that may be true, and parenthetically, it's pre-Mount Sinai, pre-Har Sinai. So, and on top of that, there's no pasuk over there that says this in the context of Yerusha, meaning we know they're brothers, but how do we know that in the context of Yerusha? And on top of all that, meaning the Gemara didn't make any of these points, but on top of all that, the Gemara points out, V'lamali, Mimishbachto, V'yireshosa, Ksiv. Again, go to the Psukim regarding Yerusha itself. It says Mishbachto. And what do we say yesterday's daf? And what are we saying again in today's daf? Mishbachas av kuriya mishbacha, mishbacha sa'im, ain a kuriya mishbacha. In terms of mishbacha, mishbacha follows the father, not the mother. So we already know that Yerusha is coming from a patrilineal descent, not a matrilineal descent. So why do I need another source? So in Achinami, the Gemara says, your point is well taken. And the Gemara says, in Rabba's point regarding the Bnei Yaakov, that was only in the context of Yibam, meaning the mitzvah of Yibam is where one brother dies and another brother does the mitzvah of Yibam. That's only when there are brothers through the father. If they are only brothers through the mother, so then there's no mitzvah of Yibam. In fact, just the opposite. Not only is there no mitzvah, then it's an Isser, because now it's Eishes Achiv. But in terms of the mitzvah of Yibam is only going to be when they are brothers sharing the same father. Period. Okay. Recap today. First half of today's daf, we further investigated the life and times of the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yohanan, son of Gershon, son of Moshe Rabbeinu. Interesting personality, to say the least. Some of the most that we learned today is in terms of investigating for Shiduchim, and don't knock making a living. Making a living is, the Gemara says, extraordinarily important, and don't ever think that any job is too demeaning. Second half of today's daf dealt with the simple question of how do I know that when there's a son and the daughter, the son is inheriting to the exclusion of the daughter. So the Gemara brought out four sources for that. Some of the sources the Gemara likes, some of the Gemara is not as much. And then finally, we discussed the question of the next line of succession, which is the brothers, although to be fair, that's not really the next one. The next one is the father, but in terms of the analysis of the Mishnah, the next one that comes up in the Mishnah is the brothers. Brothers only if they share the same father. How do I know that? The answer is Mishpacha, in terms of Bnei Yaakov. That does teach me a halacha regarding Yibum, not regarding Yerusha.